The following podcast is part of a special oral history program titled The RSL, A Time to Celebrate. The program documents fascinating and personal stories and experiences of veterans across South Australia. The program received funding through the Veteran and Community Grants stream in partnership with the Tanunda RSL sub-branch and the Emu Tree, and was produced by Christian Teusner. I encourage listeners to take their time to explore as many of these stories and adventures as possible. For further information, visit www.theemutree.com.
Today is the 12th of August 2020, and I'm talking with Lynn Hodgins from Wakery via Zoom. Lynn, thank you very much for agreeing to talk to me today. Could I just get you to start off with to state your full name, date of birth, and your service number, please?
Date of birth was the 8th of November 1923. I've got no idea who my birth mother was. Don't know anything about her. All I know is that I was adopted by the parents that I grew up with, and I've never been able to trace my birth mother. Obviously, I was illegitimate, and all I know is that my mother was supposedly 30 years of age when I was born, and I've got a name, but whether it was her actual name, because I can't find any trace of her when I've gone into genealogy. So she could have, the name that she's got, she could have, I mean, she was 30 when I was born, so she could have been married to somebody in World War One who died, and she's changed her name. So I can't find anything about her. So I'm who I am. That's about all.
Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood growing up?
I was adopted by an elderly couple. I lived in East Brighton, and when I was four, we moved to Middle Brighton. This is in Victoria. And I grew up, went to school there, went Brighton Technical School when I finished grade six. And then when I was 15, a week after I turned 15, I went to work in Myer Emporium in Melbourne. And then when my brother, who was also adopted by my parents knew his birth mother, and she died when he was four. So my brother, my mother, adoptive mother, brought him up and me too. And my brother went into the army when the war started, and he died on Crete as a prisoner of war. So when we found out that information, then I decided to get a job in the public service, and I went to work in the military intelligence department as a typist. And my boss wanted me to join the army when the women's services were formed, but my mother wouldn't sign the papers because I was underage. And then eventually I went to military training, where I stayed until the end of the war. And then I was posted to war graves. I was demobbed the day before D-Day's anniversary. And I had a fortnight's holiday, and then I went back to war graves as a civilian, and I worked there until I retired.
Do you remember when the war ended? Do you remember how you felt?
I do.
What was it like?
Well, I was working at military training, and the boss, we worked at a drill hall in Batman Avenue, which is no longer there, and the boss called us out to the back of the drill hall and said the war's over, so whoopee, jinx, were on the house. And then three of us marched into town, well, got the bus into town and celebrated in near the post office in Melbourne. So it got a bit tiddly, and then we decided to go to the St Paul's Cathedral in Melbourne to a service. And I can remember walking down the aisle, middle aisle of the cathedral, saying to one of my mates, am I walking in a straight line? And so that was our celebration, when going to the service to give thanks. And
were there people out in the streets?
It was chaos in the city, because everybody was dancing around and cheering. And And then, of course, we were a bit tiddly, as I say. So that was the end of the war. Well, my brother was taken prisoner on the 1st of June and died on the 26th of June. But we didn't know any of these details for a long time because nobody knew, you know, what happened. But I mean, I've been back to Greece umpteen times since. And, you know, we a lot of us have gone back for commemorative services at the end of May, when the, you know, anniversary of the Battle of Crete.
That must be very difficult.
Well, you know, there was a lot of, I mean, of all the mods that used to go back to Greece, I'm the only one who had, the other guys went back because they'd been in Greece, but I was the only one that had, you know, had a real true, real reason for going back because of my brother. So I could go to his grave and that. So I went back quite a lot of times. The first, I went in 1973 when my husband and I did a drove home from England to Australia overland, and we stopped in Greece and Crete. And then I started going back. I went back for 50th anniversary in 91, and I went back just about every year after that till about 2006, and then I gave up travelling. I think somebody up there told me it was time I stopped cavorting around the world. So I've got a lot of friends in America, so I would go, and I had a cousin in Texas, and so I would fly out to Hawaii and go to the services there. Then I would go to America and catch up with a few friends there. And then I'd go on to Europe and tours around Europe, Eastern Bloc countries and where all the fighting was. And so, yeah, I've seen a lot of the world. South Africa, I loved South Africa. I always tell people, if you want to go overseas, go to South Africa. But my friends there have just died, so it's only their daughter there now. And yeah, so I keep in touch with her. And
you mentioned a moment ago that back in 1973, you did an overland trip from the UK to Australia. Maybe recall some of the experiences of that journey?
We went overseas because we were going to a citrus convention in Spain. And from there, we went from Spain. We did all over Spain. We had a unit in a town on the coast for a week and went to all these convention sessions. Then we went from there into Portugal and went over to Morocco and then back through right up the coast of Portugal over to the coast, Bay of Biscay, and along the coast of Spain into France, up to the coast to the Normandy beaches, and then across to England. And we had 9 weeks in England and Ireland. And then we started to head home. We had a 132 Fiat that we bought in Italy. And then we drove into France, did Scandinavia, back into Germany, and then down into Austria and Switzerland, and Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, and down to Madras, which is Chennai, and across to Malaysia, down to Singapore, and then we shipped our car home to Perth, and we had to fly because we couldn't get on the boat. So we flew, had 5 days in Singapore while the car was travelling to Perth, and then we flew down to Perth and spent some time with some friends over there and then drove home. So we were away for 7 months.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible. Any moments where the trip almost came to an end, or?
When we were at Madras, we went down with dengue fever, which wasn't very pleasant. And so we spent 5 days on the ship, sweating it out. We were lucky that we had an ensuite cabin. So we could shower and had our own shower, fortunately. But the meals were terrible because we couldn't, you know, the doctor told us that we had to have a light diet. And I'm sure that they came around early in the morning, about 5 o'clock, with a cup of tea, which I'm sure was last night's supper stewed up. And, you know, I had to say that all the, you know, all our meals were, the tea was, and I didn't have sugar in my tea and it had condensed milk in it. So that didn't go down too well. And then we had a few days in on the Cameron Highlands to try and recover. We should have stayed there longer. And then we came down to Singapore and, as I say, shipped a car home. And we stayed there for 5 days until we flew down to collect the car, which was another stupid thing because we had to take the car. We had to drive through the streets of Fremantle to get the car fumigated, by which time all the bugs had fallen off between, you know, the 10 miles from the boat to the... The car had to be examined. And they said, while the customs guy was examining the car, go down to the canteen and have some lunch, which we did. And the guy was under the car when we came back with his legs out the thing, and he's under the fascia of the car checking with a torch and examining it to make sure there was no bugs and things or contraband. So we got that fixed up and then we came home.
So when did you first move to Wakery?
January 1962. I don't know why. When I look back and think, strike. Because I was brought up in Brighton and we lived in Moorabbin and Brighton until we moved over here. And we took up a block in Sunlands irrigation area. And then I moved, after my husband died, I moved into Warrawee, sold the house and moved into Warrawee. Because it was a big four-bedroomed house and, you know, quite a bit of land. We'd sold most of it and we just had 6 acres around the house. And I couldn't look after that, so I sold out and we actually bought in before my husband died. But he didn't want to leave the house naturally, so when he died I moved about 3 months later into Warrawee.
So when you first moved to Wakery, because that must have been such a contrast of environment.
I was going home to mother every week. my husband was a builder in Melbourne, he and his brother, and he had another brother who lived at Broken Hill, and they came down for a holiday one time. And my husband and his older brother were doing some renovations to their mother's house in Sydney. And I can't remember now exactly what happened. I rang Lewis up and said that, you know, Faye and Lindsay had gone back to Broken Hill. And he said, what would you think about living at Sunlands? And I said, I couldn't think of anything worse. And then I thought about it and I said, oh, I suppose the river's there, it wouldn't be too bad because I was used to being near the sea. And he said, well, I'll put the house on the market, which I did, and it sold immediately. And I thought that was the worst day's work I ever did. And then my brother-in-law decided that he didn't want to come to. So he got out of the contract on some loophole. He went to the service because that's where we were heading for. We were going up to the Gold, up to the Gold Coast. The four of us and the kids, and we ended up coming over here. And I thought that was the worst day's work we ever did. But anyhow.
You mean we could have been on the Goldie?
That was it. We made the decision to come here, so here we're stuck.
Did you get the opportunity to get back to Melbourne very often?
Yes, because my mother was still alive, so we'd go down pick the kids up at school and drive down Friday night, overnight, drive home Sunday night and drop the kids off at school. We'd go home and have a few hours sleep and then back to work midday. And so we went down quite a few times until my mother died. Well, actually, my mother died just after I went to Europe in 73, and I didn't know until about 7 months later that she died, so...
Did you find out why you were still away?
Well, we had some friends from here who were coming over because we'd gone earlier. Karen sent a letter with them. And then my youngest daughter had written to my mother-in-law, that was how we got the news, you know, some months later that Mum had passed away. But I mean, there was nothing I could do. Everything had been organised because she was in a nursing home. And so.
Can I ask, Lynn, what age was your mother when she passed away?
98.
So it's in the family.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know anything about her family. I have looked it up and found out a bit about her, but I really don't know much about her and all my my adopted parents. But I had a good life. I look back now and think what a terrible daughter I was to this wonderful woman who adopted me. Because, you know, as I say, it was all me, me, me. I never considered anybody else. Yeah, so I just did what I wanted to do and back and think, you know, she adopted me, went out of her way to adopt me and all the rest of it. But I suppose I'm like a lot of teenagers.
You know more than any of the rest of us.
Let's see, your birthday is the 8th of November. So you'll be turning 97 in November. What would you consider major world events that affected you in your lifetime?
I'll tell you one thing that really, and it's been quite a bit in the news, was going to a launch at NASA. We were in Florida and we did a tour of NASA and we had, you know, we were in our camper van and we left the building after doing the tour. And as we were driving out, my husband said, I wonder if there's any launches, you know, in the coming up. So we went back and inquired and there was a launch the next day or 2 days later. So we decided we'd stay for that. So we were, with all the other thousands of people, we were on a metal scaffolding, you know, that they had for seating, which was 3 miles from the launch pad. And 5 o'clock every night we were in Florida, they had this massive electrical storm about 5 o'clock every night. And so they didn't know whether this launch would go at 5 o'clock. Fortunately, the weather stayed fine, right on the dot, 5 o'clock, the launch. And this thing went zoom out and it was just going straight up like that. And then all of a sudden it separated and this white flash, and 5 seconds it was out of sight. It was just unbelievable to see that thing. And I think that's the most exotic thing I've ever seen.
Wow, you know? that's a fantastic story. What year was that? Which launch was that?
1977. We were in America for 5 months. So we spent a month in Florida. Yeah, that was an unbelievable. I just thought we were so lucky to see this thing going off into the wild blue yonder. And I also met, when he was out here, we were in, it must have been 1988, and we were invited, because my husband built his own plane, and we were invited to go to Richmond Air Force Base. Now I can't think what their name was. One of the guys that landed on the moon. No, not Armstrong.
Aldrin? Buzz Aldrin?
Not Aldrin.
Aldrin.
So I got to shake Buzz Aldrin's hand. So that was a thrill. The man had landed on the moon and I shook hands with him. So
very cool.
Yeah. So that was one of the highlights.
There's so few people that can say they've done that. And witnessed the launch as well.
Oh, that was, you know, it was just so unbelievable. And we'd done the tour of the place, and you see where they launch, and they was 45,000 litres of water or something, you know, to push it up off the ground. And there's just this massive water. And I used to write a journal of all these travels, so I'd have to look up the journal and see what date it was. But I have a fancy it was about May, but I'm not, you know, don't quote me.
You said you were keeping journals of all your travels.
Yeah.
Is this something that you would flick through and go back and revisit?
Sometimes.
And how does it feel when you're reading back through these notes of your life experiences on the road?
Well, I just think how fortunate I was that had the health and the finances to do all the travelling that I did. You know, I've been to South Africa, I've been all over Europe, and as I say, we travelled, drove home from England, so I went through all those countries, done all bar three states of America.
When was the last time you were back in the States?
2005, I went to Hawaii, America. I did around the world again. So I did South Africa, America and Europe. I did two Eastern Bloc countries, Greece. And then in 2010, I went to New Zealand for Jane's brother's wedding. That's the last trip overseas. So I went back to Greece in 2006, and that was the last, you know. Hallelujah.
Lightning.
Is that the first of it up there today, is it?
Yeah, first one.
Over those years, over those many years of travelling, you've revisited, say, for example, America, the United States a few times. You must have really seen a lot of changes.
Well, I don't know that I'm, because when I was in America, I was going from, I would get to one friend's place in the morning and I'd leave, I'd have nearly a week there. So I'd leave in the morning and arrive at the next person in the afternoon sort of thing. So I'd have about 6.5 days with each of these different friends. But I did stay longer with my cousin in Texas. But I don't know, because we weren't sort of travelling a lot around all the places. You know, I was mainly just spending time with them at home sort of thing, or just, sort of locally.
With everything that's going on in America at the moment, are you keeping in touch with your friends in the States? Like, have you...
You know what the Americans' attitude is? It's my rights. Any of my friends that I'm in touch with, they're all sticking to the rules with this virus business. So they're all, and my friends, I've got friends in Italy, and they're locked down. So all my friends are locked down, being safe. So that's about all you can say, hope for. But I mean, so many cases in America.
I'm like really curious to find out your response to this. For someone like me who has only lived, so many decades, the coronavirus is quite daunting as to what's going on around us. Would you feel the same way? And I ask that because you're 97, turning 97. You've experienced a lot of things over your lifetime. How does this compare to other things you've witnessed? Or, how do you feel?
Well, I don't think much about it because I'm in the country and sort of remote, and I don't go out a great deal because I have trouble walking these days. So as long as I can get in the car and go where I have to, very little. So this virus is not really affecting me. Yes, it's a tragedy, and I can't see it finishing it very soon. But I feel rather remote from it. I've only heard of one case in the Riverland, and that was somebody up at Renmark. But I feel sorry for all those people that are touched by it, and it's a terrible thing to happen. And I don't know where it's going to finish.
I'm going to completely go a different direction here. You mentioned something a few minutes ago about driving about. Can I ask, are you mobile? Are you still on the road driving?
Yeah, but I don't, I used to drive interstate and all over the place and when we were overseas. But nowadays I go out for coffee to the roadhouse on Saturday mornings, take a couple of friends. I go down shopping once a week. That's all. So I'm, maybe doing 10 miles a week if I'm lucky. So, but as long as I can hang on to my license and do that, I'm happy. I've got plenty of things to keep me quiet at home.
What do you do to entertain yourself these days?
Read. I'm always researching something on the computer. So I spend, you know, a couple of hours a day on the computer. I watch TV. I read. Yeah, I like doing crossword puzzles too. Oh, and I play Mahjong on the computer. So that's about it. Get on the phone and talk to people. So
have you discovered Google Earth?
Well, I do go into Google quite. I'm always talking to Mr. Google about something.
Sometimes when Nan's telling me about places, I have to look them up either on an atlas, or sometimes I'll chuck them in Google Earth because I've only got a very sketchy idea of geography myself. So we'll look up Google Earth and see what the place actually looks like now.
With Google Maps, there's a thing called Street View.
Oh, look, I the first time I did this, I went onto the island of Crete and I went all over Crete. But the thing that got me was that the hotel that we used to stay at in Crete doesn't seem to be there anymore. And I keep meaning to ring up this guy in Sydney that used to organise our trips to Greece. And I keep meaning to ring him up and ask him what the hell's happened to our hotel. So it looks as though, and it's not showing on the map, you know, it shows the buildings on the map and the street and all that sort of thing. But it doesn't seem to be there. But I haven't got round to checking that one out yet. But one of these days I'll get round to it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah, even drive past and have a look at your old, your address back in Brighton, back in Melbourne.
Yes, I've looked at our old house and it's twice the size as it was in those days. And I've seen the front of it and the top of it and I think, I wonder what they,
what's going on.
I had a photo that was taken of the house where I first lived in East Brighton. And I had a photo of that house when it was built in 1916. And so I sent a letter and we had a photo of it. So I took a copy of it and I sent it down to the people who are living in the house now. And I just addressed it to the owner or occupier. And she was thrilled to bits to get the photo. She was so excited about it. And she wrote back, emailed me back straight away and said, that they were thrilled to bits. They loved the house and because it's been altered and, added on to since we lived there.
I'm going to put you on the spot again, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Talking about Australia here, in your lifetime, what would be the major changes and developments or improvements that you've witnessed here in Australian society?
Gee, I think just about everything. I guess all the roads that have been built, all the flying that goes on. Yeah, when we first came here. In fact, I can remember getting our first telephone installed in Melbourne, because I know my next door neighbour in Melbourne, he was an engineer for the PMG, as it was in those days, but he was a divisional engineer of Telecom, and he had an old phone, where you dial the number and lift up the earpiece and put it to your ear, and he had two of these, and he put one in my his house and one into his neighbour who was a nurse, and his wife wasn't a well woman, so she could talk to the neighbour. I mean, they could talk over the fence, but they used to use a phone. So
that's clever. What about things like television?
My husband, my next door neighbours, this people, they had one of the first TVs around the neighbourhood, and we used to go to the drive-in theatre. But the trouble was, if it was raining, we had to keep switching the engine off to work, to clean the windscreens. And my husband got fed up one night and he said, I'm going out to buy a bloody TV set next tomorrow. So we went out and bought the TV set, hooked it all up, invited the neighbours to come and have a look at our TV set, and it wouldn't work. One of the batteries had gone in it already. So that was our initiation into TV. But so we had this TV set. My kids weren't allowed to touch it. They were allowed half an hour each day of watching some kids' program, the Mickey Mouse Club and what have you. And
what about music, Lynn? Was music a big part of your life?
Well, I expected to be able to sit down and play the piano, like a virtual essay, but I didn't like doing the scales. And I used to turn the clock, you know, around a half an hour, you know, kid-like, thinking Mum wouldn't have any clue that I'd turned the time around. Oh, dear me. It's like when I started work, my mother didn't believe in makeup, and I used to put lipstick on when I was at work, and walking up the street, I'd wipe it off so Mum wouldn't know that I'd had it on. Who washed the handkerchiefs with the lipstick on them, you know?
Didn't think about that.
But, yeah, and my kids used to try and put things over me, and I'd sit to it, look, been there, done that. It's no good trying to put it over me because I couldn't put it over my mother.
That's funny. If you could give the youth of today some advice, what would that advice be?
Get off your phone.
Yeah, get off your phone for a lot of them. I've thought about this, and you know, at times, and keep off the drugs. You know, just be sensible and communicate. I think a lot of the problem is that people don't communicate these days. So I think communication is one thing, and you know, keep away from drugs and all these idiots that are on Facebook and all those sort of things, I guess.
Look after your health.
Well, that all comes under it, doesn't it?
Eat your fruit and veg.
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of people, well, keep away from the cigarettes and the alcohol, I think.
Did you ever smoke yourself?
Well, I did smoke, but I was never a heavy smoker. I mean, way back, I might, you know, we used to be able to buy a packet of 10 cigarettes, and that would last me a week. I mean, I would only have an odd cigarette. I wasn't a heavy smoker. So when we went overseas, I had my last cigarette at the Sydney airport, and it wasn't one of mine. I didn't have any. I'd run out the night before, and I thought I'd get duty free on the plane. I had a cigarette with my brother-in-law's girlfriend who was there to see us off. I had one of her cigarettes. I've never had one since. Never missed them. So. Yeah, so, but I mean, when I look at the cost of a packet of cigarettes and people are smoking, my brother-in-law smoked 3 packs a day, and his wife smoked, not a lot, and he never smoked, but he used to have one with her at night, and then it got to the stage, and when I was up there at their house one day, I said, "What happened to your cigarettes?" He said, "I just gave it up cold turkey, 3 packs a day."
Wow, so, that's really dramatic.
Yeah. So, but he was one that gave it up and never looked back, you know. When I look at, but I mean, a packet of cigarettes, somebody told me how much a packet was a few months ago.
I'm not sure anymore. It's a ridiculous.
And I sort of struck a light there, paying about $2 a cigarette or something.
I think it's
more. My husband used to say, if you want to smoke, if you want to get rid of your money, he said, just set a match to it and you throw it away, you know.
Like your $20 bill.
Oh, so, but... you know, and a lot of the young ones. I guess I was.
The older ones.
I guess because in the army we used to get a ration of cigarettes and beer every week or every month. I used to get my cigarettes and sell them. Well, I didn't actually sell them. You know, the guys that come around, "Are you smoking this month? And if you're not, can I have your cigarettes ration?" So.
What sort of diet have you had over the years? Have you been pretty good with food? Don't you kind of watch what you eat?
Don't talk about diet. I did one time, I did go on and I lost a lot of weight. My brother-in-law told me I looked like something out of Belsen. I said, yeah, but I'm a damn sight healthier than those people. But I like my food too much and I eat the wrong things. Oh, yeah.
And you don't eat a lot of sugar.
No, but I do eat what I shouldn't eat. At my age, why I'm not worrying too much about being overworked. I like my food and I eat anything and everything. I'm not a fussy eater. I mean, there's a couple of things that I'm not keen on, but I still eat them. I was never keen on peas when I was a kid or vegetable soup, but I, you know, it was either eat it or go without. So no mucking around with my parents, you know. But
how are you feeling now? How are you feeling these days? Are you feeling okay? Feeling healthy?
I feel all right. It's just that I have trouble walking and, you know, my balance isn't the best. If I go out anywhere, if I go shopping, I always park next to the trolley, so I've got a trolley to to hang on to. Or if I go out, I take my walking frame, you know, for security, because even around the house, I'm unsteady. I've got to be careful when I'm walking around the house. But other than that, I'm fine.
Fantastic. Can you summarise how you feel, what your thoughts are on life? What's the meaning of life, for example?
I don't know. Never sort of think about it. I'm here and I figure one day I'll die, and that's about as far as I ever think about life.
You've been living in Wakery now for 58 years. Could you explain what's special about the area and what you like about living in the Riverland?
It doesn't mean a thing to me. I couldn't care if I never saw Wakery again. I often say, you know, you're supposed to like the place where you live, sort of thing. But I couldn't care if I never saw Wakery again.
It's about what I think of Adelaide.
and yet I don't know where. I wouldn't like to go back to the city, because when we were talking about selling up the orchard and retiring, we thought we'd go around the East Coast, you know, around Marimbula Way somewhere, Eden area, because we used to go around there camping. And we got to the stage we couldn't think of anywhere we'd like to go, so we thought we might as well stay where we are. And I said to Lewis, well, if we went around on the East Coast, what are you going to do with your aeroplane?
Take it.
Oh. So we thought we might as well stay where we are and just travel. So that's what we did. I suppose I'm an odd bod when I say, you know, I couldn't care if I never saw Wakery again. It's never felt like home to me, which I, you know, to me it sounds ridiculous. I'm here and here I stay till they carry me out boots first. So there you are. When we first came here, Sunlands had been a farmland, and you know, it had all the mallee trees on it. Oh. So we went round. We had an old truck, old army truck, and we used to set the automatic choke, you know, the kids would be out roaming around Sunlands, loading up the truck, and it would just crawl along the road or along the bush tracks and that. And we had that much timber. We had huge piles of it out the back of the shed. You know, it lasted for about 15 years.
Really?
then they chopped a few gum trees down. So my husband went down with a cross saw thing, you know, and chopped it all up and loaded the truck up and brought it up. So we had another few years' supply of wood. Then we ran out altogether and we couldn't get any firewood. Like you, we couldn't have a fire. And then by that time we managed to have enough fire to keep us going till my husband died. And then here I haven't got a fireplace. I've got a radiator, which I hate. Oh, well, I've got a reverse cycle air conditioner, which I hate. You know, there's no fresh air. So that's what I like about my car. I can have fresh air, have the heaters on my feet and the fresh air coming into my, you know, into my face sort of thing. So that's one benefit of the car. But
what sort of car do you have, Lynn?
Subaru. But it's as old as me, you know, it's 30 years old.
I'll study on. Subaru Liberty. I have a car the same age, but nowhere near it as good a nick.
Oh, the old Subaru.
They're well built. Cars from that period, a lot easier to look after as well.
It's a fantastic car, and my son was down a while back, and I was talking about you know, changing it over and getting a smaller car, and my son told me not to be ridiculous. It's a fabulous car, you know, and it runs like clockwork. And
you've always kept it right up to speed with all of its bits and bobs and
it's always been looked after.
You kept the logbook for the whole shebang, haven't you?
Yeah, well, the last few years I haven't kept a logbook, but I did. I had everything that was ever done to the car, and every time I filled it up, I've got it on the computer, you know, all the details of the car. But the last few years, I haven't been doing any mileage, and I haven't checked it out. So, but as long as it lasts, as long as I do, that's all that matters. It looks as good today as when I bought it.
It does. It's pristine.
One of my sons-in-law did decide to cut and polish my car one time. Didn't realise that the Duco had a seal on it. And anyhow, I took it round to this friend of ours who deals with cars, and so he resurfaced it for me, you know. Poor old Michael didn't know what to do. He was so upset. But there again, I didn't know it had a seal on it, you know.
Mm. Len, we're going to have to wrap it up there. What I'll do...
I've enjoyed talking to you.
Have you? I thank you so much for agreeing to do this. Do you have any photographs of yourself back when you were in service?
The only photo I've got is one taken at Luna Park in Melbourne when a friend of ours had a nephew or grandson or somebody out from, he was in the RAF in England and he was based in Singapore, and he came down to visit and they had nobody to look after him because they were elderly. So I was nominated. So we went to Luna Park with another relative of theirs and his girlfriend. And that's the only photo I've got. We had a centenary of World War One, and they had a thing down at the RSL Club and all these photos. And I thought, and that was the only one I could find of me. I would never have my photo taken for some reason or other. I don't know why. You know, I've got photos in the album of me when I was a little kid, you know, when I used to go to ballet school, the different costumes that we had for concerts. And that's about the only photos I've got of me. And by the way, do you want my army number?
I most certainly do, yes.
ZF512921.
Thank you very much, Lynn Hodgins, for taking the time to talk with me this morning and to share some experiences.
My pleasure.
It's been an absolute privilege. Thank you so much.
It was nice to meet you too.
You too. Thank you, Lynn.
Anytime you need anything, just give us a yell.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure, and you keep safe too.
You have been listening to The RSL, A Time to Celebrate, 2020.